From a snowy seacoast, New Hampshire, it is Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason, contributing editor and podcaster for WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. Very snowy here. Had a huge snowstorm on Thursday and dropped about a foot and a half here. So still kind of feel a little bit sore, some of the after effects of that. And yeah, it's some parts of our small state here got almost up to 4 feet. You know, the people in Buffalo and other parts of the upstate New York and upstate other places are probably just like, yeah, big deal. But boy, this is quite a storm here. But everyone's happy and healthy and good. Hope everyone's doing well. No coronavirus. Everyone's packages are delivered. That's going to be, of course, a big stressor for a lot of people this week, as if this year wasn't stressful enough. But yeah, we're almost at the end, everyone. And yeah, again, hopefully everyone's doing well. Final UFC event of the year tonight. Errol Helwani posted the other day. This is the stretch since July, so International Fight Week. I think the first week of July, July 7th, if I remember right, to today, there's been a UFC show every single weekend. Isn't that crazy? That is amazing. We know they do a lot of shows, and the reason for these packed-in shows we're going to talk about here. But that's crazy. But we need a little bit of break, and we're going to get a break. We're going to get a month off until the next UFC show, which I believe is a McGregor-Poirier fight. And we'll get excited about that a little bit closer to that event, given the events of the world as they still continue to go on. This episode of the show, we continue our look back at the year that was in 2020 in MMA. And this was a lot of fun, as they always are. Paul Fontaine of WrestlingObserver.com and Fight Game Media joining me as always. And this was April, May, and June. So April, if you remember last episode, the Rona started hitting. This was March. And then we really started feeling the after effects in April, including a completely batshit crazy approach to what the UFC was trying to do to find a place to put on any show, which includes going to Native American reservations, being very dodgy with the media, and a lot of things in between, including the cancellation and the final nail in the coffin of the fight we never got, Tony Ferguson versus Khabib Nurmagomedov. But this is again, a lot of time of interesting stuff here for this 3 month stretch. Let's get right into it. Yours truly, Paul Fontaine, talking about April, May, and June 2020 in the world of MMA. Enjoy. Well, amidst a big snowstorm from yours truly, body aching a little bit, got a nice bourbon sitting next to me, helping me through the aches and pains of a foot and a half of snow. I'm here with my good friend from Winnipeg, Paul Fontaine.
And I got a double-double from Tim's.
Oh, Tim Hortons. I love Tim Hortons. I love Tim Hortons. How do you take your coffee there, Paul?
I either have it black or double double. So if I'm treating myself, it's a double double, but it's usually black.
Now, tell me again what a double double is.
Two creams, two sugars.
Two creams, two sugars. Got it.
Yeah, but you just say double double. Yeah, and that's like an extra large. So always an extra large.
That's any
like four of them every day.
any Timbits with that?
Sometimes. We also on the app they give you deals all the time, and if I can get them for $1.99, I'll get a 10 back.
Awesome. Good stuff.
Yeah,
good
just
stuff.
Keep them in the car. Keep them in the car, and the temperature acts like a refrigerator, so I don't even have to – they don't even leave the car. They're just mine.
Yeah, whenever I go to Canada, I love going to Tim Hortons. Obviously, there's you know, Dunkin' Donuts and all kinds of options here. But yeah, Tim Hortons, also a big favorite of one Lance Storm as well.
Yeah, and new sponsor for Josh Nation's Punched Out, Tim Hortons. Grab a Timbit. Oh my God,
that would be absolutely great. I'll just take free coffee, and I'll give the coupons and everything to you.
There you go.
So we're not here to talk about coffee, even though that would be fun. We're here to talk about more in the year that was 2020, as we hurtle towards the end of this terrible year, 2020. But there was a lot of interesting stuff that happened, and obviously, you know, as we allude to last week, looming on the horizon was UFC's eventual return to action. And again, if you can hear a snowblower in the background, everyone, dude, that will go away soon. My neighbor, it's 9 o'clock at night. My neighbor, for some reason, decided to snowblow like starting like an hour ago. I don't know why he's doing that so late at night. Anyway, But yeah, so this was the heading into a very bizarre stretch in USC history to begin with. And we had a bizarre stretch. We talked about in March, and we went through that whole timeline. But this is, you know, we'll kick off here. So we're going to go April, May, and June in this episode. And so we'll start with April, obviously. And really, you know, this kind of this big in my document here, Paul, as you can see, there's a giant block of bold. And this really all surrounds UFC 249. So there was UFC 249. This was scheduled originally to be in Brooklyn, New York, as we talked about before. And everyone knows at this point, obviously, everything getting shut down. The states shutting all types of mass gatherings. And of course, you know, no sports, no concerts, no events like UFC were allowed in the state and even in the city, obviously. And of course, UFC 249 is supposed to be headlined by Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Tony Ferguson for, I believe, the fifth time. They were trying to make that fight happen, and we would not get it again. Of course, we should have known that a worldwide one in a hundred year pandemic would be the thing that didn't cause that fight to happen, right? But this whole story. So I'm going to kind of run through these things, and then we can kind of get into the meat of it here. So initially, we kind of start here. So kind of try to configure the timeline a little bit. So Khabib Nurmagomedov at this point, he was in Russia, and it was this whole thing of like, where could he fight? Where could he go? And he said he can still fight at UFC 249. And if UFC gave him a location, and they were being very dodgy about a location, there was all this talk almost every day, it seemed like, about whether this event was going to happen or not. Rose Namajunas was scheduled for the event, and she dropped off due to some relatives struggling with coronavirus. So that was kind of made it a little bit more real there. And then, so UFC 249 obviously couldn't happen in Brooklyn, but Dana White, undeterred, said this thing is going to happen one way or another. So he found this, he said he found this location, and this was a, this is like harkens back to the, for people that are into UFC history, it harkens back to like the Art Davey days. And if you read some of these stories, especially one of them, how they've had to fly to Alabama essentially the night before a show that was scheduled. I can't remember what state it was in.
I want to say Buffalo, maybe?
It might have been. Yeah, they talked about it in the John Stone's Shamrock book as well. Ken Shamrock book that came out this year.
I'm reading that right now, but I haven't got to that.
Yeah, that's a really good book, huh? I liked it. I really liked it. Anyway, so, I mean, this is like that type of crazy level of shit here. So they found a secret West Coast location, told 249 and other shows. He wouldn't say where it was, and everyone's kind of like, where is it going to be? And like, they were trying to figure all this out. And finally, Jeff Sherdog, out of all the people, said, oh, it's going to be at Taachi Palace in California, which is on Native American ground. And he's obviously from that area, pretty well connected. He's like, this is it. This is where they're doing it. I know this for sure. And just like that, they said, all right, this is happening. About a week or so afterwards, Dana White announcing that UFC 249 was going to be held there. Obviously, Khabib was still stuck in Dagestan, Russia at this point, obviously not able to travel. So what they were going to do was Justin Gaethje versus Tony Ferguson for the interim lightweight title, Yair Rozenstruik versus Francis Ngannou. And in general, I mean, this card was like a killer card when it was announced. I remember this, and this is, again, we're like, you know, probably 3 weeks in the pandemic, maybe at this point, 2 weeks, two and a half, something like that. And they lay out this amazing card. We're just like, holy, this is going to be like fun. And almost, it made us like forget about the world happening. Right. And then, Taachi Palace and all this stuff. So then, you know, there's obviously questions about how are you going to pull this off? Right. And so Dana White was very, as we've talked about, very dodgy about the details. Didn't want media finding out about anything. Didn't want anyone to poke holes and everything. And so some people might be asking themselves, what about the athletic commission? Well, state athletic commissions can't have no jurisdiction on Native American ground. So UFC would be doing their own self-legislation for this and a regulation, which they do when they go to certain countries that don't have regulation, which is pretty normal, you know, pretty on the up and up, I would say. And so all of a sudden, like I said, mainstream media started paying attention to it. And then there was this New York Times story that came out, and I believe it was a guy named Kevin Draper that wrote it, that kind of pointed to this whole situation of why are they doing this? Was the regulations, safety, all this stuff. And of course, this didn't go that well and didn't go over that well, rather. And eventually, I think this might have been on a Thursday, if I remember it, UFC 249 was canceled. California Governor Gavin Newsom calling in a favor to, or basically calling into the people at Disney and ESPN, who were going to be obviously putting on the show, ESPN Plus, basically saying, what are you guys doing? They should not be doing this, and it's pretty highly recommended that you do not go forward with this event as in your role as a partner with us. And then obviously USC 249 is canceled. Dana White said we could have done it if we wanted to. They could have done it on Fight Pass, but basically best to be a good partner and not cause any issues. Not using his words, but basically that, you know, they could have done it, but you know, is in the best interest that they didn't do it. Of course, he complained about that. And then eventually about, I don't know how far afterward, but all UFC shows are postponed indefinitely. And then Fight Island, which we'll talk about in a minute, that was still a go at this point, going in the timeline, and Dana White saying that we'll be the first sport back. Tony Ferguson said he was still going to be cutting weight despite the cancellation, which was strange. And then later in the month, it was announced that UFC was going to be holding UFC 249 on May 9th with still really good card. Ferguson, Gaethje, Henry Cejudo defending his bantamweight title against Dominic Cruz. Amanda Nunes going against Felicia Spencer. Donald Cerrone versus Anthony Pettis 2. And then later, Noon said that she wasn't fighting, and Joe Rogan was going to commentate the show after initially saying he wasn't going to do the show because that was a big story at the time. I think we talked about that last time. And then it was later announced, it was, okay, where's this event going to be? And then later announced that UFC 249 and three other shows were going to be heading to Jacksonville's ViStar Arena for the month of May. Obviously, we just talked about May 9th. And that Glover Teixeira versus Anthony Smith and Alistair Overeem versus Walt Harris are going to be booked as main events for that. Three shows essentially in a week. We'll go in that kind of that first section, Paul. UFC 249, the complete shit show that it was around it. Every day there was new news about what was going on with this, was going to move, the secrecy, the secret location. No one could figure out where it was going to be. Turned out to be, again, this Tachi Palace Casino. Just a very bizarre situation altogether that eventually turned out to an event happening in May.
Yeah. What's the old saying? Much ado about nothing. Yeah. Given that there was not a single fight in the month of April of 2020, which I don't remember the last time we could actually say that, probably going back, 15, 20 years. And now, and all this news surrounding an event that ended up not even happening until May. And yeah, it was just crazy. But I mean, it gave us all something to talk about. We talked a little bit about Tachi Palace last week. It was just insane that they were going to do it. They could have. Obviously, cooler heads prevailed. ESPN put the kibosh on it. And obviously, yeah, they could have done it, but they weren't going to do it unless they could get their pay-per-view money. And I think, as it turns out, obviously, for safety reasons, it was better to do what they did. But I think even for business reasons, it ended up probably doing more business than it would have done if they would have had it in April, just because people were so starved for anything. And by the time that they actually did this show, I mean, it was a great show, number one, but number two, people had spent, 2 months cooped up in their houses and didn't have any money to spend on they didn't have anything to spend their money on. So I think it worked out best for them. It was just insane. All these a lot of these fights that they talked about actually did end up happening. So it was a great card, and I just remember the insanity surrounding this, like the California governor getting involved, and just living through this and Fight Island. I mean, we'll talk about that in a second, but when you hear, if you just walked in, if you've never followed MMA and you just kind of stepped off a boat and you're hearing about this now, like, we all know what Fight Island ended up being, but at the time, what we had in our heads of what Fight Island was going to be, and Dana said, like, oh, we bought an island and we're not telling anyone where it is, and we're going to have, fights on the beach and all this stuff. And then people were like, he was a crazy man. And this is like mainstream media, because they had nothing else to cover. So it was insanity, but it gave us something to talk about.
You're right. Everything did turn out for the best. I think from a regulation standpoint, it turned out for the best, because now, yeah, especially given what we see now with the Apex and with Fight Island as well, because the system is down. And in at the Apex, I mean, because the state athletic commission is involved, even, you know, as shoddy as they can be with regulating referees and judges and decisions and just kind of how that works, from a health standpoint, I mean, they've got this system down. Obviously, you know, April is a lot different than December as we sit here now. They've had a ton of events there to work out the kinks, but that's kind of the whole point. Is at this point, you know, we're still in this stage, as crazy as back then. Like we didn't know, right? And these things were going bad. They were going bad some places, and I mean, the regulations we had now are so much different than where they were then. And there's this element of not trusting a promoter to do the right thing. And he can say, and he kept saying this, and, you know, the UFC has a track record of, you know, all we care about is fighters' health. That's number one priority and all that. It's like, it's true, but we've never done this before, this whole pandemic thing. And his lackadaisical attitude towards it, you know, some of the quotes we had last time, you know, if I get it, I get it. If I die, Corona, I die. You know, his concern with this was just not evident at all. And the fact that he was being so dodgy with some of the information, that immediately points to, in any other industry, it's like, okay, they're hiding something. Why are they hiding? Because you couldn't get away with this in the NFL. If all of a sudden the Patriots and the Chiefs had to move a game, or we just had like the 49ers couldn't play in California anymore, said it moved to Arizona. You know, if they said we're going to play at a secret location on Saturday or on that Sunday, and like
Football Island.
Yeah, it's a Football Island, Pigskin Island, Pigskin Park. Yeah. And they're like, well, we don't want, if Roger Goodell said we at this handled, no worries. Well, where's the game going to be? Well, you don't need to know about that. Well, only the players need to know about it, and the personnel and all that. It would be the biggest story in the country. It'd be like, what is going on here? But because it's fighting and still treated as a sideshow by so many, you know, so it was kind of like when the New York Times got a hold of that, of course, you know, Dana White thought that was the biggest BS piece around, but it wasn't a hit piece. It was actually honest journalism about the craziness of having this event and not giving any details about it, even to fighters and camps and all that stuff. And eventually, you know, stuff leaked out, but this was just complete chaos. But eventually, you know, they said, we're heading to Jacksonville. Dave actually had that first, I believe. I remember writing the article on the website, because he kind of randomly dropped it in Wrestling Observer Radio, and it made sense. Florida, we'll talk about in a minute, opening up for business, and they were able to do a controlled environment. They were able to work out a lot of the kinks. So things did work out. Just the whole chaos around this 249, of course, in lost in all this, as I mentioned at the top, we still did not get Khabib versus Tony. And yeah, at this point, we're never going to get it. I mean,
especially now after last week.
Right. Yeah. I mean, at this point, unless it's like, yeah, Khabib fighting championships, like, you know, 10 years from now, Mike Tyson, Roy Jones Jr. situation, you know, we're just never going to get. So this was just a completely chaotic time. You mentioned Fight Island. We'll kind of go in this next section of coronavirus. Well,
there's one other thing. Like, when you put on here, like, I saw the last item, the three shows moving to Jacksonville. I actually had to look it up, because in my brain, like, I completely blocked that out. Like, I thought they went straight to the Apex. Like, I totally forgot about the shows in Jacksonville. So I don't know if I'm the only one, but
it was the Sunday. It was the Saturday show, yeah. And then it was the Wednesday show, and then another Saturday show, and then like a week later was another Saturday show.
Then I think, like, even at the Wednesday show before the Saturday show, we still didn't know where the next show was going to be after the Saturday, and they were advertising it with no location because we had no idea. Like, yeah, they ended crazy. Up, I think. It was crazy. But yeah, yep. Go on.
Yeah, so you mentioned Fight Island. We talked about that a few seconds ago. Dana White, during the night, saying he was close to securing a private island for international fights. So he said this on TMZ. Fighters won't know where they're heading. This crazy thing. And the guy that was interviewing him said, you know, it's kind of like a fight island, because Dana didn't have this name. You know, he's just like, Fight Island. He's like, yeah, I kind of like that, Fight Island. He mentioned eventually like an octagon on the beach. And, you know, the dreamers in us all were thinking this could actually be kind of like, Yeah, like blood sport, amazing fighting on the beach, not thinking through the logistics of what time is it going to be? what's the temperature there? Is it tenable to fight on a beach? You know, we've seen these outdoor MMA shows before for smaller promotions, you know, outlaw mud shows, to steal a phrase from Cornette or whoever. But I mean, we've seen these before, and we've heard about fighters that have fought like in parking lots outside with the sun beaming down. Like, outdoor fighting is not like the best thing because there's so many elements you can't control. But Alistair's kind of, oh, this is awesome. Just go for it. Can't wait. It obviously would turn out to be a lot different as we would see later on. But I mean, the fact that they were doing it was intriguing. Again, not revealing anything. I remember there's all the speculation about where could it be. I think Guam was mentioned at one point, like all these different islands. And it's just like, you know, Dana White kept saying, you know, we're setting up, building the infrastructure. That was the big thing. We're building this infrastructure. It's like, are they building a facility? Like, is this a long-term thing? They were talking about having obviously Ultimate Fighter there, and just the images of it. Like, you picture like guys like hitting a heavy bag outside, like in a Hawaii setting, you know, get training and all this stuff. It just was like the most romantic images of fighting. And it, you know, just turned out to be, you know, just Yaz Island in the end, spoiler alerts. But yeah, it was just, but it was kind of a unique thing. But as we look back at it now, you know, obviously it was smart from the dude. They had an international location, so people could fly in and do that with an infrastructure, and obviously a partner in Saudi Arabia, Abu Dhabi, correct. So Abu Dhabi, that has obviously had a long association with the UFC, the Fertittas, a ton of money, and more than willing to help out and use it as a tourism hook for whenever people can travel again in, you know, 2030. So it made perfect sense if you look back on it. You know, cheap workforce, do whatever you need to do. And some of they're going to treat, as Dana showed, some of, you know, the luxury suites he has there and all this stuff, like, you know, they're going to treat him good. But it made sense to have the international location and then eventually have the Apex. So where eventually they got to turned out to be good. But there was so much romanticism about Fight Island, I think. And then when and they did build an octagon on the beach, no one fought in it. But this was pretty wild, the speculation about this, too.
Yeah. First I heard of where it was going to be was actually Ryan Frederick, in our Facebook group. He had a beat on it somehow, a couple days before everyone was talking about it. And at the time, like, this was still fresh off of Dana. I mean, I'm sure I know I heard him say, we're buying an island. So like, at the time, that's what everyone figured. They're going to buy an island. They're going to set up an octagon on a beach. And then, you know, they're going to have this infrastructure there to where, like, they're going to be running there for a while because you're not spending money on an island and an octagon and training facilities and all this stuff if, you know, you're just going to leave as soon as, you know, you can. So, I mean, that was kind of what I know I had in my head, and I'm sure most people did. And then, yeah, like you said, it turned out it was just basically them moving to, a place where, you know, they could host them and have a good, you know, good testing and a bubble situation and all that. And, I mean, what ended up happening was great, but for a while I guess, again, it gave us something to talk about when there were no fights going on. So, for that, I guess we should be thankful.
Mm. All right. So let's go the rest of the COVID related news of that month. California State Athletic Commission saying no go to UFC San Diego for reasons that are obvious. This was an interesting story at the time. The Association of Ringside Physicians recommending the suspension of all fights. And this was obviously, boxing fights, boxing matches, MMA, anything under their purview. They're recommending, just due, obviously, the unknown, the spread of the virus and everything, that suspension of all fights. Obviously, UFC didn't follow that at all. UFC postponed two more shows due to the pandemic. Bellator canceled the June show that was set for Chicago, I believe, featuring Benson Henderson against Michael Chandler 2. They said they were still planning on having 30 shows for 2020 once they could figure everything out. Dana White saying UFC was not expecting a live gate for a long time, which obviously hurt the possibility of Conor McGregor returning because of the money that he generates, but also the money that they need to pay him. Clearly they have that, but the live gates, if you've seen some of these live gate numbers when he fights in Vegas, does big business. And obviously without having fans, that hurts that quite a bit. Jose Aldo was out of a UFC 250 fight against Henry Cejudo, which we talked about last time. Dominic Cruz was in, as we mentioned, and then eventually UFC 250 was not happening in Brazil after all, because fighters can't fly in. As we talked about a few minutes ago, Florida passed a new quote-unquote essential business rule that opened up both opportunities for UFC and WWE and pretty much any pro sports organization, but really, obviously, you know, this was really talking about, this is kind of the WWE rule, to be honest, and people, obviously, that are interested in this website know this more than ever. You know, they won WWE there, and they were able to figure out a way that somehow that Vince McMahon and company were essential business, and obviously that was able to get the UFC there, which led to Jacksonville, and also AEW as well. Let's see, Endeavor needed to pay some debt. We talked about last month with they paid out all these celebrities $350 million, I believe. But however, they need to pay this debt, which is talked about all the time, and their credit rating was downgraded as a result. Dana White said they were moving their shows to Las Vegas in May at the Apex, and of course there are questions about that, whether they're going to be able to do that or not. Obviously they would. The PFL, we thought we were going to see Tom Lawlor and others fight there finally, made the announcement they were going to suspend their 2020 season. However, they said they were providing stipends to fighters, but the fine print of that was they cut a lot of fighters. So they provided a stipend to a very, very small amount. Lyman Good became the first UFC fighter to publicly say that he had coronavirus. And then we learned that Khabib Nurmagomedov's dad was not in good health battling pneumonia. We'll talk more about his situation, obviously his passing later in the year. But and obviously coronavirus would play a major role in that. Any thoughts on that chunk?
The Florida passing the new essential business rule, I remember when that happened, everyone kind of assumed, okay, Florida does it, next there'll be Texas, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. We just assumed that all these states were going to open up and UFC would have, you know, basically their pick of places to go. And they ended up in Las Vegas, as you mentioned. And I think it's to their credit that they didn't just decide to run in these other states that would have housed them, probably would have even let them have fans, certainly Florida, but they decided to do it in-house, which is better for the fighters. They made less money by doing it, I would think. Well, in some ways, I mean, in another way, they didn't have to pay for venues, so there may have been an ulterior motive there, and maybe having 1,500 to 2,000 fans in a 10,000 seat building wouldn't have made sense financially for them. So that might have been part of why they did it. But I still think that, you know, going around and just running shows wherever someone would let them run shows was kind of what we assumed would happen. At least I did. And it didn't end up happening. So good on them. The PFL, I know of at least one fighter who was under contract, well, Tom, that you mentioned, he said that he never got one of those stipends. So I don't think he was one of the ones that were cut. It's possible he was, but I know he didn't get any money from them. Or at least that's what he said publicly. So that was kind of, and the amount of money, like from what I heard, that for people that did get it, I mean, I think it was like a grand maybe.
Yeah.
So certainly not enough to cover bills or anything like that. And I think a lot of those fighters ended up, I know Kayla Harrison was fighting on regional shows and certainly some other ones, I'm sure too.
Yeah. And remember this Dana quote, going back to all this stuff years ago, this is a quote he would say and was quoted by anyone when the UFC was on their rise. We run to regulation. We don't run away from it.
Mm-hmm. And
remember that quote. There's other kind of non-COVID related news in the month. Ronda Rousey made headlines defending UFC sponsor pay and also made comments about WWE fans and fake fights. For people that remember that, she was basically defending the UFC and this how the fighters get paid, obviously not being able to wear logos on shorts is a big thing. And you see these numbers that come out, just a disparate amount in what they were making before and what they make with the Reebok deal. Obviously, we'll talk about that change in a minute. But, you know, that was a big thing. And she was just making comments that made people pissed off. And it's kind of like you're still, I don't know. At this point, she says stuff and I really don't care that much. Dana White and UFC in a bizarre story were sued by an extortionist in a sex tape case. You guys wouldn't look at that. Anthony Smith fought off a home invader in kind of a scary story. And for some reason, John Jones decided to mock him for not shooting the guy. And Anthony Smith fought John Jones and before obviously losing in that fight, it was a decision or fifth round stoppage. I can't remember off the top of my head, but Anthony Smith guy, I believe we got a rear naked choke on this invader. It was is able to call police. And of course, John mocking him on Twitter for not killing the guy and all stuff, then started mocking Anthony Smith, and really just a strange, strange look and a very, you know, another strange year for a strange fellow in John Jones. Paul Felder decided he was not retiring after all, after his fun split decision loss against Dan Hooker. Frank Mir became a free agent after getting released by Bellator. Tyron Woodley said he was up for fighting Colby Covington on May 9th. Cody Garbrandt versus Rafael Assuncao was booked for June. Cain Velasquez, remember him, was released as part of the WWE pandemic-related cuts. And finally, Vitor Belfort decided he was going to make his one fighting debut at heavyweight with a quote-unquote big opponent. As we sit here, Paul, we are still waiting for that big opponent and for the debut of Vitor Belfort.
I actually, I guess 6 months has passed. We can let the cat out of the bag. It was actually supposed to be Big Dave Meltzer.
Whoa.
But yeah, but I guess they didn't agree to terms. So that fight between him and Vitor is not happening. You heard it here first. The fight is not happening.
Must have been something demo related.
Yeah, yeah. No, Vitor was very upset with the fact that Dave doesn't think he's a draw in women 18 to 49. And yeah, Frank Mir being released from Bellator is, I mean, again, we talked before about the guys that Bellator tends to hire and they collect a paycheck and then kind of fade away. I think there's a few of them that would happen to later on in the year. And the ones that hasn't happened to yet, I mean, we can go over the list and it's just, it was nice for Frank Mir to be able to collect a paycheck for a bunch of fights that nobody really seemed to care about. And he's, you know, and now he seems to be focused on training his young daughter, who I imagine will come up at some point in our future discussions.
I remember when I watched the Mir fight, when he got pummeled by, I think it was Javi Ayala.
Yeah.
And I was like, first, I'd never heard of Javi Ayala before. And it, just to see Frank Mir just bloodied and beaten, you know, almost
just,
like
yeah, it, just it, a big, big yeah. Mexican.
Yeah. Yeah. And then obviously that very boring Roy Nelson rematch. I'm like, this is not fun. This isn't fun.
He fought Mitrione too.
He did. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just, you know, again, good for him that he collected paychecks well past his expiry date. You know, walked away relatively mm-hmm. healthy, I would think. So,
and still wants that Brock rematch, the trilogy fight. Still looking for that somehow.
I'd pay for it.
Yeah, I think most people. I'd pay for anything with Brock. Love Brock. Yeah. All right, let's go to May, and we just talked about Jacksonville, and we jogged Paul's memory with UFC running Jacksonville. So we have a date, we have a state, we have a city, and now it's like, okay, how are we going to get here? So this is the first part of May. So UFC finally decided to tell their fighters about their safety protocols in Florida, but didn't offer any specifics about COVID-19. We learned later that there were swab and antibody testing they were doing. And again, this, as you listen to this now, you may be thinking, well, of course they were doing this stuff. This is back in May when everyone's like, what is going on with this, right? So swab and antibody testing, and then 1,200 tests were made available. So obviously they were making a substantial financial commitment to this process, and there would be no in-cage. It was a whole like lit criteria of things they were going to be safe with UFC 249. No in-cage interviews by Joe Rogan or anyone. They're going to do sanitized headsets. So basically they explained how fighters would leave the octagon, kind of how they do the process now. Guys leave the octagon, they go to a separate area. You know, the headsets are sanitized and it's all, again, distancing and everything. But it was very, you know, very kind of clear about that. Then UFC 249, it happens, kind of. So we're on the road that week. Jacare and two corner men pop for the Rona. And Jacare Sosa, obviously. So that was a big thing of like, okay, does this whole thing get shut down? How, like, did he come in contact people? Was he wearing mask? And there was obviously a lot of discussion about this because it's the first time we had seen this since the restart happened. There's a Donald Trump, I believe he did a voiceover at the beginning of the show, or he did an announcement or something like that, if I remember right. But there was a big thing there, as he and Dana White, their relationship we've talked about before. There was a controversial waiver that everyone had to sign that was in attendance, everyone being media even, event workers, all this stuff. Basically, that if they, it was, I think it was just the fighters, if they talked bad about the company, They couldn't sue if they they couldn't talk bad about how the company, this is for the fighters, I remember this now. They couldn't talk bad about the company and how they handled the whole virus thing. And then also media and everyone had signed the same waiver that they couldn't sue if they got the coronavirus. So it was just kind of weird because, like, why are you making, you know, media members who are going there sign a waiver? It's kind of implied that they are accepting the risks. But there was this whole discussion about really about, you know, was it censoring free speech for these fighters that are independent contractors to be able to talk about something if it goes wrong? Dana White tried to clarify that afterwards, essentially saying that, kind of just playing it down, saying really this was about if they said, you know, we didn't test or something like that. We obviously did. But that was just kind of a whole shit show. To the fights themselves, Anthony Pettis decisioning Donald Cerrone in their rematch. There was a great fight between great fight machine, best bout machine, Vicente Luque and Nico Price, who is also one of those guys that anytime he's on the show, you got to check out. Calvin Kattar knocking out Jeremy Stephens with a vicious elbow. That was a great fight. Justin Gaethje dominating Tony Ferguson to win the interim title. Henry Cejudo, TKO to Dominic Cruz. Quick victory there, and then retires surprisingly afterwards, just I'm done. Of course, everyone's like, is he really going to retire? But to this point, he still has. Francis Ngannou, quick knockout of Yair Rosenstruck. And I mentioned the Dominic Cruz loss. Dominic Cruz claiming the referee smelled like booze and cigarettes. And the show did great, as you alluded to earlier, about, you know, estimate of, I think it was about 700,000 is what was noted on pay-per-view. But this was a very fun show. Fun main card. It felt like a release after, you know, essentially a month and a half, give or take, of no events. And it felt good. It felt weird. But in the end, this was like, this is a very memorable night for the UFC and a good one when it came to the in-cage action and the news that came out of it.
So the you talked about when they announced the card, and they talked about the different things that they're going to be doing to protect the fighters. You mentioned no in-cage interviews. And then first thing we saw when they were going to do an interview was Joe Rogan got in the cage and interviewed somebody.
Yeah.
No social distancing. And then he talked about it after and he said, like, I'm going to interview them the same way I always have. I've been tested. I'm safe. I don't see any reason why we can't interview. Like, I remember they talked about this after the event. And they just went on and on and on. And then, like, they didn't even really, I don't think even they understood that they weren't actually being tested for COVID-19. They were, you mentioned the swab and antibody testing, but they weren't actual COVID-19 tests. And so I think Rogan, between after this event and before the next time he was on, he must have educated himself and he started following the protocol after this. But this was the one event where they were interviewing people, or it might have even been all the Jacksonville shows, but once the Jacksonville shows were done, they went to these, interviewing them from just the fighter area and remotely, and having all the announcers sit, in different corners of the octagon. So, that was something. The Trump shout out reminded me of something. I had to look it up to see when it happened because I didn't see it in your notes. And it happened in April, but if you recall, Donald Trump had a conference call with the major sports heads,
yep.
And Dana White and Vince McMahon were included on that.
Mm-hmm.
And basically he was just saying, you know, we need you guys to get out there as soon as you can. So basically Dana White, you know, in trying to get these shows going, felt like he was following his president. So Trump did that shout out. I also remember him being interviewed during one of the first golf events that came back. He was basically, it was under the guise of color commentary, but it was basically just a campaign speech. And I'm sure he did that in other places as well. So he was using this as, you know, campaign. He wanted everything back to normal. And unfortunately, you know, it was going to get a lot worse before hopefully it gets better soon. Mm. The actual card. Yeah. Like you mentioned, honestly, like all things, like just putting aside everything that we were dealing with, this would have been one of the better cards of the year anyways. But the fact that it was the first card in 2 months almost, and that we hadn't had any sports, I mean, I think for while you're watching it, it was probably, you know, one of the best cards anybody had ever seen, just because it had such high expectations going in because of the lineup, and it lived up to the expectations and maybe even surpassed them. I mean, there wasn't really a bad fight that I can recall, certainly not of the major ones. And I mean, we had some great performances by Justin Gaethje, Henry Cejudo, Francis Ngannou. And then we had the great moments, like the, you know, the controversy between Dominic Cruz and the ref whose name escaped, Keith Peterson.
Yeah,
with the tattoos. And then, you know, the jokes that were, you know, every time, you know, anytime he did anything even remotely controversial, you know, 8 million people on Twitter would comment that, you know, he check him for booze, you know, which was probably not the best look for Dominic Cruz, but he was also probably concussed when he said it. So,
and the Cejudo retirement, which was a surprise. Talk about that for a minute.
Well, I mean, yeah, like everybody assumed, and probably rightfully so, that it was a money play. But here we are, 6 months later, 7 months later, and he's still retired. Although he's always, anytime anybody fights at bantamweight or flyweight, and that's anywhere close to title contention, he brings up, "You're holding my belt. You know, you're not really the champion until you face me," and all this. So I think I would be shocked, I'll say, if we don't see Henry Cejudo at some point in 2021 back in UFC, as soon as they can come to terms and he sees a fight that he likes. I think that he was interested in, I don't think he ever really wanted to retire, but I think he just wanted to see what other options were out there for him. Right. I mean, he did show up on an AEW show at one point, and maybe he was looking at that, you know, mm-hmm. with Mike Tyson, as part of Mike Tyson's entourage with Rashad Evans and can't even remember who else. But I don't think we've seen the last of Henry Cejudo. We certainly haven't heard the last of Henry Cejudo. That I can guarantee. Hopefully, you know, even if he comes back as a commentator, because he's an entertaining guy. Like, not everybody likes him. I get a kick out of him. They call him Captain Cringe, but I get a kick out of him.
Yeah, he made a character out of himself, and when he was flyweight champion, and I think kind of helped start make that division interesting in terms of someone to pay attention to, and that's always a good thing, you know. I think that's always.
And you got to think with Deiveson Figueiredo like making a name for himself at flyweight, like that could be a big fight down the road.
Yeah, I would agree. Let's go to some of the rest of the juicy Jacksonville action and some of the other action that happened throughout the month, coronavirus related and so on. So UFC Jacksonville, the first show after UFC 249, Glover Teixeira defeating Anthony Smith by fifth round TKO. This was a well-known for the quote-unquote my teeth are falling out fight because Teixeira was just lighting him up. And, you know, some of his teeth were coming out, and it turned out to be veneers or it could have been real teeth. And the corner would not throw the towel in, and there was a big discussion afterwards about all this. And essentially, you know, it goes back, this, when should a corner say it is done? And we've seen this going back to, we talked about, you know, Raquel Pennington's fight, I believe that was last year. You know, there was that whole story. I mean, this has gone on and on. You know, with boxing, obviously throwing in a towel isn't exactly foreign. In MMA, it is. Obviously, we see some fights stopped on the stool, and I think we'll probably talk about them. There was at least one notable one. This is how rare it happens. One involving an undercard, a late, last-second replacement undercard fighter that we're actually going to talk about in this year in review show, right? I mean, this is how rare it happens. But there was a big discussion about that, and he was trying to defend himself afterwards, and it was just a whole thing for people that remember that. Ben Rothwell returning to defeat Ovince St. Preux. And I believe this might have been Rothwell's first fight since after the USADA suspension, if I remember right. OSB going up to heavyweight. Marvin Vettori was supposed to fight Carl Roberson on the show, and it was notable because there was clips of Vettori flipping out at Roberson after he was pulled from the show for missing weight, or he was sick or something like that. And that made the rounds. Obviously, Marvin Vettori would have some interesting stuff going on later in the year. And then we go to UFC Jacksonville again a few days later. Alistair Overeem, big TKO win over Walt Harris. Walt Harris, we talked about him before. Obviously, the tragedy with his stepdaughter being found dead. This was his first fight back after that. A lot of goodwill. Everyone's kind of like rooting for him. I think even, you know, media people, whatever, are rooting for him. He was winning this fight and then just got just lost it all. And it was just, your heart just sank for him. Obviously, this is the fight game. These things happen, but you just absolutely broken heart for for what happened there. Claudia Gadelha also won this this show, fighting with Angela Hill. A really fun split decision there. Dana White saying that he wanted a UFC event in Vegas at the end of May, but also that Arizona was an option as well. We had learned that event would be May 30th at the Apex. UFC finally returning to Las Vegas with a main event of Tyron Woodley versus Gilbert Burns. Dana White said he had to watch the event from the back because he didn't want to wear a mask. And part of the regulations was he had to wear a mask if he was going to be in the facility in the arena part of the Apex. And he's so stubborn, he didn't want to wear a mask, so he decided he was going to go back watch in his private room instead. Make of that what you will. At that UFC Vegas show, Gilbert Burns dominating Tyron Woodley over five rounds. That would turn out to be obviously very good for him in terms of earning a title shot, which we are still waiting to see at some point. Mackenzie Dern returning with a, I believe this is her first fight back after having the baby, if I remember right, picking up a submission victory, the first leg lock win by a woman in UFC history. So that was interesting history there. And then Kayla Chookagian returning after her defeat to Valentina Shevchenko, picking up a victory. All this, of course, raising the ire of Bob Arum, boxing promoter, who does not like Dana White, and Dana White doesn't like him, doesn't think that Dana White should run. However, Dana White getting praise from his old friend, not necessarily friend, old foe, Oscar De La Hoya. So if you know their history, that was quite the thing there. Stipe Miocic saying, no way I'm going to fight during this coronavirus outbreak. Well, that would change later on in the year, wouldn't it? Dana White saying that other sports cave to the quote-unquote media pressure. UFC Kazakhstan was scrapped. Dana White saying he wanted three or four shows a month on Fight Island. Obviously, that would not be the case. John Oliver, a comedian that does Last Week Tonight on Sundays on HBO, we talked about this whole controversy and all this stuff, created UFC SEA, and Dana White would have some in the UFC, would have some fun with that with a charity shirt later on. And then finally, UFC upgraded their COVID-19 protocols. Imagine that. For their return to Las Vegas. What do you think?
So I feel like I'll be with that dude from Pardon the Interruption that corrects people. And I know Ryan Frederick, who Statboy? I'm sure is listening, is going to be, Statboy, who's going to be like freaking out when you said that it was Mackenzie Dern's first fight back, because she actually lost her first fight back.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
her only loss of her career, which was only a few months after she gave birth. So, you know, take that into account when you're looking at the career of, Mackenzie Dern, as we'll talk about later in the month. That was an inside reference to Ryan and I, cause I know he listens. I want to talk about the UFC Jacksonville, the second show, actually, a couple things on there. When you mentioned everyone was pulling for Wald Harris, I think even Alistair Overeem was pulling for Wald Harris. I remember watching the fight and Harris came out like gangbusters, and Overeem just was backing away. He clearly didn't want to hit this guy. And so finally, when he got rocked a little bit, that's when he started fighting back, and he knocked him out first round, you know, near the end, or maybe it might've been the second. It was early anyways. And as soon as the ref stopped it, he immediately went and consoled Harris. They were hugging. He says, I want to train with you. Like he just like, you know, Overeem just came off as such a nice guy, and everyone in the world was pulling for Wald Harris, and it was too bad that he lost. But I just thought that was a lot of class by Overeem. Claudia Gadelha split with Angela Hill. I had Hill winning that, as I think a lot of people did. And this was kind of the bloom was off the rose of Claudia Gadelha, who was one of the first stars in the featherweight division. She had fought Joanna Jędrzejczyk in the first strawweight fight in UFC history. And they fought to a decision. And then Joanna went on to win the title. And everybody, you know, was clamoring for that rematch, which they ended up having. And her stock has fallen quite a bit. And this was like the rise of Angie Hill, who, you know, seemingly was fighting like every second weekend on a lot of these shows, and really I think improved her stock like in terms of an undercard fighter like quite a lot in 2020 amidst all of this chaos that was going on. And she's like, you know, by all indications a really nice person. She's got an awesome Twitter game if anybody wants to follow her, and I just think like that's somebody that you know, I'm kind of pulling for to have a really good 2021. The John Oliver thing. I'm a big John Oliver fan. I watch, I don't like, I watch every show. I don't necessarily watch every week. I usually leave them on my PVR and watch them, like, you know, in bun. You know, I kind of binge them. But that UFC thing was so natural, and I don't know why they never took advantage of it. I think it's maybe just because Dana White eats John Oliver.
Yeah, and you're right. The Alistair Overeem fight, that was a second round TKO win.
Yeah.
By Overeem. And yeah, I remember this. I remember, if I remember the fight right, Harris was dominating the first round. Yeah. It looked to be one of those, you know, it seemed to be going that direction where, okay, this is going to be a 5-round wrestle fest, you know, grapple fest. But yeah, Overeem was able to clip him and then turn it around pretty quick. Yeah, I remember it just completely broke down, and yeah, just felt obviously awful.
But if you watch like the beginning of that fight, like Overeem, like he's normally like right in there, and he did not even want to engage. Like, I just think he's looking at this guy and like, I don't want to hit you.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like it just, you could see it on his face.
Now let's go through the rest of the month. Non-COVID news. Bellator and DAZN were on the outs. This was basically a story where DAZN obviously puts on live sports, and if these organizations aren't putting on sporting events, they can't pay them rights fees. And they didn't come out and actually say they weren't going to pay them, but essentially it was a story that came out that, they were not going to be paying these rights fees because they weren't getting content. And DAZN had a really terrible year. All things considered, as we go into this weekend, the same company that basically shit all over pay-per-view is putting on a pay-per-view featuring Canelo Alvarez and also Triple G and charging $70. So make of that what you will. UFC 250 started filling out. Corey Sandhagen versus Aljamain Sterling was a fight that anyone that is a fight fan was salivating for. Sugar Rashad Evans. Sugar Sean O'Malley was announced that he was finally going to return again. So that was some good stuff. Amanda Nunes, Felicia Spencer featherweight title fight was moved to June 6th. Jessica I versus Cynthia Calvillo main event was going to be set for June 13th. And that when that one was announced,
yeah,
that was kind of like, okay, because I remember when, you know, they had the month and a half break. We were like, okay, when they come back, all these shows are going to be completely loaded up. And then it was like, well, the reality started setting in of they're going to start running this really aggressive every single week schedule. You're going to be a little bit light in some spots. And that was kind of the first like sign of, okay, this is, you know, not exactly a main event stat, but whatever, it is what it is. Dustin Poirier versus Dan Hooker was moved to the June 27th card. And then the vacant UFC flyweight title rematch between Joseph Benavidez and Deiveson Figueiredo was set for July 11th, along with Frankie Edgar versus Pedro Munhoz. Obviously, that would change. You know, UFC was looking to do Peter Yan versus Jose Aldo for the vacant bantamweight title, which didn't make a lot of people happy, considering Jose Aldo actually won a fight at bantamweight at the time. Darren Till versus Robert Whittaker was set for July. John Lineker, Hands of Stone, I believe, or you know, I remember what his nickname was in UFC, but hard hitter, signed a 6-fight deal with ONE Fighting Championship. Lauren Murphy made some headlines saying that Eddie Alvarez was unkind and degrading to women on Tough 26 when he was a coach there. And John Jones started fighting for a fight with Francis Ngannou at heavyweight. Everyone was excited, except the guy that actually makes the fights, Dana White, saying, fine, I'm not really that interested in it. There was this whole conversation about basically that Jones was asking for, quote-unquote, an absurd amount of money, eventually decided to vacate the light heavyweight title. I don't know if we ever really learned what the absurd amount of money was, but it was an interesting discussion to have because, you know, there was talk about, you know, how Jones has done a pay-per-view, how he makes compared to money he's made compared to other boxers, the potential that could actually generate, and really what an absurd amount of money is. And I think, you know, I think the number like 15 million or something like that might have been thrown out.
I had heard 30.
Maybe it was 30.
What they were going to pay him was 15.
Yeah.
And honestly, either one of those, when you have no gate, is probably an absurd amount of money for UFC to pay unless ESPN's going to help.
Yeah, but I mean, this goes back to the, you know, how many pay-per-views are you gonna sell? But
yeah,
if UFC is getting this guaranteed money anyway, you know, it's whole thing we talked about last time with the whole Brock Lesnar $15 million thing, right? It's like, if you're ESPN, you're going to be thinking, make the biggest fight you possibly can. That way we get this money back, and then we split after, you know, split the revenue after a certain point, everyone wins, instead of the conversely, like, we're giving this money and you're like, well, we want to hold our negotiating and hold our line here. So yeah, so this was a whole interesting conversation about, well, is it a certain amount of money? Just why can't you make the fight and all that stuff? So the whole kind of fight biz thing was on display there. And finally, Ken Randleman was announced he was going to be inducted in the UFC Hall of Fame. Mike Perryman's new cornerman revealed to be his girlfriend. Very strange situation there. And finally, Colby Covington leaving American Top Team. Thoughts on any of that?
Well, Bellator DAZN, obviously we'll hear more about that later in the year. Certainly makes sense. I mean, the whole deal never made sense to begin with. I think they signed a 3-year deal for $99 million and everyone was just kind of scratching their head. And obviously Bellator went ahead and, you know, signed anybody they could and to who knows how much money, and good for the fighters. But it just kind of felt like a money laundering scheme or something, because it didn't make any financial sense for anybody. The Peter Yan Jose Aldo vacant bantamweight title fight. I mean, you mentioned that he hadn't won a fight at bantamweight. I don't even think he fought at bantamweight, and he was coming off losses at featherweight. So, you know, but again, like, there's no one else in that division that you could, you know, realistically headline a pay-per-view with. Aljamain Sterling probably is the guy that deserved a shot, but you can't headline a pay-per-view with Peter Yan and Aljamain Sterling. Although they just
did
Figueiredo and Brandon Moreno. So
yeah, they almost had to.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, you know, if you have any other options, and Jose Aldo was an option at the time. So, that's what they decided to go with. John Lineker, I feel like I mentioned this at some point, maybe it was on a different show than yours, but to me, I'm looking forward to one coming back, because I really like their roster. And I think John Lineker's style is really suited for how, like, the fights go there. Their rules are a little more lax, and he's going to have some drag out knockout fights over there that, you know, people are going to be looking for, I think. And eventually, I think we're probably going to see Lineker matched up with Demetrius Johnson, and that'll be a hell of a fight.
Yeah, I don't understand one. I don't get the schedule. I don't know when to watch the fights. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like,
it's usually Friday mornings. Our time is when they air, but I have no idea like how or when or anything. I usually just try to find the good fights on, you know, YouTube or something like that.
Yeah.
I think there's a one app that you can subscribe to and actually get the fights, but I think they only air live. So
I know that they have BR Live. And,
yeah.
And then there was this TNT deal that was supposed to happen.
Yeah, they did one show, and, you know, they did like maybe a fifth of what AEW does, and that was it for them.
Interesting stuff. Yeah, if you read a little bit more about that promotion, there's some of their bizarre promotional tactics and claims and things like that. It's a weird place. Weird place. Let's get into June. We'll wrap it up. This is June was kind of a weird month as you look back on the headlines. There's a few events and a lot of a couple news and notes, but really it was like a lot of fights being made for the future. It was really kind of a transition month as we come out. We're, you know, in the beginning of the summer in the pandemic, we kind of know where we're at, but also we don't know where we're going. And it's like, all right, we're going to plan ahead. We have these two locations now. Now we can start to kind of build out shows and try to figure this out. So there's a lot of pieces moving on the chessboard for the second half of the year. And what a second half it was. So June, UFC 250, Amanda Nunes downing Felicia Spencer in a dominant decision victory. Cody Garbrandt, a knockout of the year nominee against Rafael Assunção. I believe this is at the end of the second round, essentially just hitting a hook and just laying out Assunção like cold. And even bad haircut and all, Cody Garbrandt finally returning and looking fantastic. A lot of excitement for him after this fight. Aljamain Sterling running through Corey Sandhagen, submission victory. This surprised a lot of people by how dominant Aljamain Sterling was, maintaining or cementing his claim as the next in line to get a bantamweight title shot in the winter of Peter Yan versus Jose Aldo. Sugar Rashad Evans O'Malley returning, knocking out Eddie Wineland, former WEC champion. I believe the first WEC was it bantamweight champion? I believe.
I think so.
Yeah. Sounds about right. I interviewed him for Fight Magazine like a long time ago. We actually talked about that. Anyway, so him knocking out Eddie Wineland flat. And remember afterwards, you know, they were asking Dana White, like, you know, is Aljamain Sterling going to get the winner of Yan and Aldo? And he was non-committal. And it's like, dude, what are you waiting for? I mean, Sterling's on a great run, beating great guys. There's nobody else. He has got to be it. He was non-committal on saying if Sterling was going to be the next guy. It's just such a bizarre instinct. Anyway, UFC Vegas 3, Curtis Blaydes edging out Alexander Volkov by decision. Josh Emmett, this is a fight of the year candidate. Josh Emmett defeating Shane Burgos. This is a really great fight, made even crazier by the fact that Emmett tore his ACL during the fight and just kept on fighting, showed some signs of it, but just kept on fighting and hitting. And this was crazy stuff. If for some reason you have not seen this fight, go out of your way to see this. Josh Emmett, Shane Burgos from the third UFC Vegas show. We just talked about this. Max Ropskov, if I'm pronouncing it right. This whole quitting on the stool controversy, this I believe in the second round, I think Robert Drysdale was his coach, if I'm remembering this right. And he was basically like, I'm done. And Drysdale was like, no, you're not. It's just like, I'm done. And it was just this whole like thing afterward. And the fight was called and there was a lot of discussion about whether he should have, whether he shouldn't have. Again, the role of a corner, that whole thing gets brought up again. And Ropskov, Dana White saying he probably wasn't ready for this. He was a last second replacement and ended up getting cut after this fight anyway. So make of that what you will. And Dana White slamming Curtis Blaydes, his victory after comments about pay. If you were reading the stories before this, Curtis Blaydes was essentially, again, complaining about fighter pay, being vocal about it, making some great points, and kind of put on a boring victory over Volkov in this. And then, Dana White, of course, saying, you can't complain about not getting paid a lot of money and then putting on a performance like that, which is kind of you get it, but then also it's like, well, there's just kind of a whole like back and forth there. What are guys getting paid for? You compare athletes to other sports and whatever. But a fight that was great, UFC Vegas, this is on ESPN, UFC Vegas, ESPN 12 or whatever nomenclature you want to have there. Dustin Poirier defeating Dan Hooker decision. This is a fight of the year candidate for sure. This was an amazing fight. We talked about this before. Would this fight be made better if there were fans? I think Casey Lydon and I were talking about this. Would this fight be made better if there were fans in the arena? Or was it just perfect as it is because you could hear everything? This was just, again, a fantastic fight. Mike Perry defeating Mickey Gall, kind of a surprise there. And finally, UFC Vegas again, Cynthia Calvillo decisioning Jessica Eye. And I don't think there was anything else on this show. Thoughts on any of those results?
You reminded me of something I wanted to say last time. And for anybody that's listening to this, and I know a lot of people really like these shows, like as much as I like doing them, and maybe don't listen to all the other ones that you do. And I want to recommend to anybody listening, if you haven't, go back and listen to that interview that Josh did with Casey. It was, I really, really enjoyed it.
Oh,
I know it was
you.
Casey's first time on here and he had a lot of great stuff to say. And his point about the fights with no fans and, you know, whether or not they'd be better with fans, you know, and his perspective as somebody that is at ringside and, you know, often will hear what's going on in the cage, which nobody else does. And now that he's at home and watching them, he's watching from a different perspective than other people. And I really appreciated hearing that. It did give me something to think about. And I do think that this is something that when we look back at 2020, as bad as everything was, that's one era, you know, this era in terms of fights is something that we're always going to remember. And I think it would be cool if they did go back to fighting at the Apex occasionally, maybe, you know, run of shows, with no fans, just because they can, and because it will give fans that, that different perspective. So
yeah,
That comes out of this.
I think I mentioned this during the talk with Casey's, I think they're going to do that a lot. And the reason is, this what really opened my eyes to this was the WWE $45 million savings they had during quarter three, if I remember the call right. This and they were able to save all the production costs because they were able to. They didn't have to do the travel. They didn't have to bring the set everywhere. They didn't have to bring all the they had to fly talent in, but they didn't have to move the whole production. Production costs a lot of money, obviously. But they didn't have to, and they were doing tape shows, which saved a lot of money. Now, obviously, UFC is not going to do tape shows, but again,
they could.
They could. That would be interesting, right?
Well, no, I mean, if they have no fans, I mean, you know, there's no reason they couldn't. I don't think they will, but they could.
They could. That's a lot. I think the issue is the ESPN thing. There's so much, live sports. I mean, and the chance that something gets out. I mean, that's a lot of people you have to keep under wraps. Where WWE, it's kind of it's part of the shtick. You know, you don't want to reveal certain things, whatever. UFC or MMA, I think, would be a little bit difficult. Anyway, but I think, you know, instead of going to Rio Rancho or Bangor, Maine.
Yeah, I was going to mention Bangor. I mean, what do you think they do in a gate? 300,000?
No, it was less than that, if I remember right. Yeah,
they may be losing money on. I mean, they're never losing money. But, I mean, they're losing money as opposed to if they ran with no crowd and save all those travel expenses and they still get their TV money.
Right. And they're building. So it was 321,000. That's how much they did the gate in Bangor.
There you go.
Yeah. I was there that night. It went to college about 10 minutes away.
Good guess for me.
That's good. But I think they, because they're building the hotel there.
Yeah.
And I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, they can bring in, you're going to have the media members stay there. They can do everything in house and they can probably even make money off of that.
If you did 40, you know, if they're going to stick with their schedule, say you're going to do 40 shows a year, you know, give or take, we'll call it round 40. Yeah. You do 12 to 14 pay-per-views. You do those, you know, throughout the where you can draw fans. Obviously, you're going to go to, you know, a couple in Vegas. You're going to have probably Houston is one, Australia, you know, the big hubs that you can make a ton of money, Madison Square Garden and all that. But, you know, maybe you go out on the road instead of going out for those other. Maybe do 10 shows on the road and the rest you do at the Apex, you know,
they could even have maybe exclusive deals where, you know, you do meet and greets and merchandise and maybe you pay a grand or something and you get to attend and you're one of 100 people at the show or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, where they can get their high rollers in there. The hotel would obviously want them there as well. And I think that's a great idea. And I'd be shocked if they didn't do something like that.
So in terms of
UFC 250, I wanted to talk about, I didn't order that show. I just kind of made a decision that I wasn't going to buy a pay-per-view that had Amanda Nunes and Felicia Spencer in the main event. And I regretted, I was trolled by, Ryan Frederick throughout that show because of how awesome it was. There was a fight or a knockout of the year candidate in the opening fight, which ended up getting topped later by Cody Garbrandt, so I regret that decision and I've bought every pay-per-view since. So, that was my mistake. And I did go back and watch it later because I have UFC Fight Pass, but I just wasn't going to spend $60 on Felicia Spencer is the decision I made.
Yeah, I mean, that's a decision that fight fans have to make every month is whether or not I'm going to spend on this or spend on something else or try
and
to stream
it
or whatever.
And it was a half after the AEW pay-per-view too, so that kind of factored into the decision.
Yeah. All right, we'll go through this this other chunk here. We'll wrap it up. Conor McGregor retiring for a third time. This is how common this is. This is like the 10th thing we've talked about this month, right? It revealed that Dana White said that Conor turned down a short notice fight at UFC 249. It is some question about whether or not that actually happened or not, but it's kind of, you know, with the legend of Conor McGregor, of course, retiring for a third time and we're about, you know, a month away from him coming back yet again. Fight Island finally had a start date, looked to be kicking off on June 27th, and it was revealed to be Yas Island in Abu Dhabi. Venom signing on to be the new outfit partner for the UFC, kicking off in 2021. Officially ending the Reebok era. If you've been kind of following the story and kind of, you know, a little bit about Venom, there's reason to be excited. They're a true fight brand. They make good stuff. I can attest to that. I have a pair of Venom gloves downstairs. Not that I'm a professional or anything, but just saying they make quality stuff. But hearing other people talk about, they have specific, one of the cool things about it is they have specific lines associated with fighters, like most other, you know, athletic apparel companies do with top athletes. Lomachenko, the top Russian boxer, or maybe some Russia, but anyway, so they had like a specific line for him, and a bunch of other, top flight boxers they have under deals. You can customize all this stuff. So there's a lot of reason to be optimistic that it will not be the traditional kind of boring, no change, a very little change type of approach that UFC and the Reebok deal had. So there's reason to be excited. So that should be fun to look at in 2021. Curtis Blaydes, and I talked about this, actually we went over that, Rizal Ray, Blaydes and Volkov, that made it was signed. A lot of like kind of like short notice, quick to come together fights being announced for these shows. Holly Holm versus Aldrin Aldana was announced to main event the August 1st show. Stipe Miocic wasn't going to fight during the pandemic. Guess what? Stipe Miocic defending his heavyweight championship against Daniel Cormier. The trilogy fight to headline UFC 252 on August 15th. UFC 251 getting Kamaru Usman defending his welterweight title against the aforementioned Gilbert Burns. Volkanovski versus Holloway 2. And then also Peter Yan versus Jose Aldo. Triple title fight bill, UFC 251 in July. Everyone get excited. We'll talk about that on the next episode. UFC 253 was eyed for potentially Khabib versus Justin Gaethje in Abu Dhabi. Calvin Kattar versus Dan Ige was signed to headline a July 15th Fight Island show. Derek Lewis versus Alexei Oleinik to headline an August 8th show. Alex Gustafsson didn't want to stay retired, decided he wanted to come back and sign for a heavyweight fight with Fabricio Werdum, a decision he would later regret. Dana White, and this was a fun debate. If you want to find this on YouTube, Dana White and Dominic Cromartie did a debate, an impromptu debate on First Take about fighter pay. This was, I actually did a post on the website about this. This was like one of those things that you watch it and it's like, you know, Dominic Foxworth? I completely blank on the names. Been one of those days. But this fight with this debate was like, it just kind of came organically, and you could see the best thing. I'm cracking up thinking about it. Dana White's face when Cromartie was basically like, he was going at him, and Dana White's like, he made this face like, this is supposed to be a promotional appearance. Why is this guy giving me shit? It is so great. Oh my God. If you have not seen this, it's like 5 or 6 minutes, if that. It is well worth your time to see. It was good. It was somebody that is outside sport. He's a football player, but is involved in obviously their union, and was asking honest questions. And this is stuff that Dana White has paid a shit ton of money to talk about and for the most part, he deflects it. Obviously MMA media, say what you will. They've asked these questions so many times, he knows how to work them. But going into a promotional appearance on ESPN First Take, he was not expecting this. It happened organically. It is the facial expressions alone. It was one of my favorite things of the entire year. It was great. Speaking of that, former UFC fighters, there's this hashtag going on about Joe Silva and basically people telling horror stories of having to work with him, his negotiating style, all these terrible stories, all these fighters coming out and talking about this. That was fun to follow as well. Dana White saying he would not do 50% capacity shows in Florida or anywhere else. He would rather do the empty Apex Arena. We've seen the same thing with WWE. They didn't want to have fans either. I think, you know, it's kind of weighing the benefits of having fans come in, the testing, all those type of things, and, you know, control what you can control. And both guys, you know, Vince McMahon and Dana White, very similar in that respect. Speaking of Dana White, he was unsure what to do with Anderson Silva next. We'll learn more about that in the months ahead. Jorge Masvidal, big surprise, having issues with his contract. Dana White doesn't care. Hashtag foreshadowing. Gina Carano posting a topless pic on Instagram. Henzo Gracie didn't like it. Very strange. And finally, UFC cut man at one of these Jacksonville events wearing QAnon symbols. That wraps up June. Paul, any thoughts on that?
Yeah. When I'm looking at these, it's funny, when you ran down all these fights that were signed, my first reaction was, I know, like in this era in 2020, in COVID, and I think even in that interview I talked about with Casey, you guys mentioned it, like, I don't even not only do I not get excited for fights when they're announced, I don't even pay attention until fight week. Like, I basically Monday morning of fight week, I look and see, okay, what's on tap for next week. And then I look again on Friday, and there's usually been about 4 or 5 changes since then. Like, it's just the era we're living in. You know, even the card we have coming up this weekend, they put it on about a month ago. They showed, oh, this is what we got planned for the last show of the year. And I'm like, why are you doing this? Like, the card looked great, but I knew there was no way half these fights were going to happen. And sure enough, like, here we are, and you know, we've got some good fight. Like, it's a good card we have coming up, but they're, you know, it's not the same card that they announced a month ago. And again, that's why I don't get excited. So a lot of these fights, a lot of them ended up happening. And as you go through them, it's funny because if you put aside the fact that it was a COVID year, like a lot of this stuff I could picture in a normal year, and I could even picture where it would be. Like you talked about UFC 251 getting the triple fight main event. Well, that would be International Fight Week. Mm-hmm. And then you got Miocic and Cormier heavyweight title fight in August. They tend to have a fight like that usually every August, and it would be like Houston or Chicago or somewhere like that. And then the, you know, the Khabib fight in Abu Dhabi, I think they did that one year, like last year. Khabib and Poirier was around that same time and around that same part of the world. And then you've got all these other main events that would be all over the country on these little shows that you talked about in Bangor and South Dakota and New Mexico and all these different things. So in that sense, it was like a typical year, except they were all either at the Apex or at Fight Island. But as you're watching them, other than the fact that there were no fans there, you know, they might as well have been at these different places. So one little game I like to play is when I'm watching these shows, I kind of picture, okay, if this was a normal year, where would this card be? And you know, and you'll have a fight like when there was one a couple, maybe last month, where there was like a half dozen fighters on the show from Australia. It was the Adesanya pay-per-view. And that would have been Australia. You know, and then, you know, you've got one with a bunch of Asian fighters. Okay, that would have been a Korea show. And, you know, and so I like to play that game as I'm watching. And hopefully we'll be back to that, hopefully next year, you know. And but again, I think there's going to be some changes like we talked about a few minutes ago, where, you know, we might start to see a lot of shows in empty arena. It'd be nice to have that mix, you know, and then you'll appreciate the shows with fans more. And you'll also appreciate the shows without fans where, oh yeah, you know what, this week's going to be from the Apex. We're going to get to see, you know, a hard hitting fight when we'll hear it and we'll feel it, you know, and maybe they'll even start to experiment with things like, you know, like VR and stuff like that. At some point, which, you know, there's a lot of cool things they can do when they can control the environment. So, the second last thing you mentioned, I was not aware of, so I might have to check out Google. I'm going to get off here.
It'll help get you through a nice cold winter night. If you can sift through her.
I don't know why Hans Andreessen doesn't like it. I did research on him as well.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. If you can, you have to sift through a few of her, anti-COVID, whatever. Yeah.
I want to see how she's holding up over the years.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they have not done a show in Australia with, because you could have fans there.
Yeah, but like do they have to quarantine when they get there? And
Been 2 weeks in Australia. I'm sure a lot of these guys would love to be in Australia for 2 weeks and get the hell out of here.
They're not doing full arenas, so for
maybe
for
it was
them,
New Zealand. But they're doing like rugby and especially like an Adesanya fight or something like that. You could get any gate in the time frame, you know, the time of day works because I've heard that it's their morning there and they're used to getting up early and going crazy and stuff like that. So they're like, they're good to go. So it's, you kind of look for the reasons, right? And we've been trained for this with follow the money. That's always the thing. Follow the money, follow the money, follow the money. And I think it is a case of where they like the two situations that they have, and they're just going to stick with doing that until the point where they're like, okay, we can go out and actually draw fans and it's going to be financially worth our while. I think it's going to be a long time. And he said it's going to be a long time before they draw a gate again. I think they're so, you know, they said they're going to be the first sport back. I think they're going to be one of the last ones to really go out because it has to be like the right thing. And we're going to learn a lot from this McGregor number, assuming.
My prediction would be that their first show with fans will be International Fight Week in July.
That's a good guess. That's a very good guess.
And I think the reason they're making a lot more money from Yas Island than people realize. And that's probably got something to do with this. And then, like you say, like, even though they can run in Australia or New Zealand, I don't know if they're doing 100% capacity, especially if it's indoors. and you're taking a lot of risk doing an outdoor show. And then it's a matter of, will they sell the tickets? Like, I haven't really looked into like how many tickets they're selling for rugby, and rugby certainly down there is way more popular than UFC. So there's a lot of factors, and would they sell out? Would it be worth it? Or are they better off running the same show in Fight Island and getting, you know, whatever they're getting for a site fee, you know, or running a show at the Apex and, you know, not making any money off the gate, but keeping everything in house and keeping their expenses down. So
yeah, they do. I mean, it's been I don't know. You put like a Adesanya fight, a Volkanovski fight on there.
You would think there's got to be a reason why they're not, like you said. Mm. So, you know, unless it's just maybe even the cost of just flying everyone out there. And I think when they do run shows out there, like they tend to have, like they'll do like three international shows in a row to where they're not in Vegas for like a month. So maybe they're saving money on the travel by, you know, not flying everyone back and forth. And for that, like, unless they're going to run a series of shows out there, it may not be worth it just to go out there for one show.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, you know, like, who knows? Like, there's got to be a reason, and someone a little more tuned in than me and maybe even you would probably know the reason. And it's probably a good question to ask at some point.
Yeah. Follow the money, as always. There's a financial reason behind it. So
Ryan on our podcast.
We're six months into this. We're the virus changed everything for everyone in every walk of life. You couldn't escape it. The UFC is they did some good things, and they did a few bad things, but we're here. And now the second half of the year, they've learned a lot from the mistakes. They have two locations. They have now Vegas. They have the Fight Island, and I think we're going to see, and as we find, you know, wrap up these final two shows of the year, the final 6 months of the year, is a lot of interesting fights, a lot of interesting developments and things, kind of at least in the fight game, getting back to normal. A lot of shows. Bellator was going to come, will come back, as we'll talk about. And things were, again, getting back to normal, and in a lot of ways kind of resemble the traditional fight calendar. However, with a lot of changes towards the end of the year. So I'm looking forward to talking about the final 6 months.
Awesome.
Good stuff. So Paul Fonte, before I let you go, if somebody for some reason didn't listen to the first episode, I can't imagine they didn't, tell them, you mentioned Ryan, you name drop Ryan a lot on this show. He owes you a few beers next time you catch up. Talk about your Fight Game Media podcast, the work you do there, here, and everywhere. Go for it.
Sure. Yeah, I won't do an extensive plug as I did last time, but
God.
Ryan and I, if you don't know, co-host a podcast. We're 3 weeks in now. It's called In the Clinch on the Fight Game Media Network. So it's a Patreon. So if you Google Fight Game Media Network, you'll find us. We're part of a package that includes one podcast every day for, you know, every weekday. And we are the only MMA show, but there's, you know, it's all pro wrestling and boxing. So check that out if you get a chance, and, you know, let us know. You can follow me on Twitter, Paul Ace Fontaine. And if you do check it out, or if you check this out, let me know what you think. Other than that, I do the ratings articles on WrestlingObserver.com and cover generally every other UFC show. And on Fight Game Media as well, I do similar type of articles. And then it might even be getting into some post-game UFC coverage shows with special guests, and either part of the Patreon, or we there's also a free I don't know what the word would be, but a free feed on just Fight Game. Fight Game. Yeah, we release a couple free episodes every week. So maybe on one of those, I'll show up every once in a while.
Good stuff. So we'll talk to you at some point soon, Paul. And I think
maybe we'll work that out off air.
Exactly. Off air. As they say, he's a pro. Look at you. I got a few podcasts in, you're a pro already. Paul Fontaine, thanks so much for joining me.
All right. Take care.
All right. Told you it was crazy, right? Big thanks to Paul Fontaine for dropping by, as always. He continues to open up his schedule for me. I know he's a busy guy with writing and all that stuff. That was always, always appreciated. I want to actually pull up, it is crazy, right? I mean, like that stretch, that UFC 249 event alone, there's going to be some, years from now, when we're through this, this whole pandemic era, especially just in sports alone, there's going to be tons of books and all in documentaries and all these things about, you know, how we went about this whole thing. But sports alone is going to be a fascinating subculture, subplot, subreddit, whatever you want to call it, of all that. And I was listening to, I think, the Bill Simmons podcast a few weeks ago. And he's talking about, you know, 20, 30 years from now, we're going to look back at how the NFL basically just plowed ahead with the pandemic raging again, the second, third wave. And they're just basically, these games are going to happen no matter what, right? And UFC really kind of approached things the same way. And it's going to be fascinating to look at this when we have some perspective. And again, I know we're not to trivialize things, but assuming everyone gets through this, knock on wood, everyone's healthy, good, this is going to be like, it's going to be quite a thing to look forward to. And I don't even think we realize it because we're in it, you know? But you hear like, you know, your grandparents or parents talking about major events of the past, where you were, how they survived certain things, and great grandparents talking about, you know, the Great Depression and just how life was. This year that we're enduring, this is going to be something that's going to be talked about, you know, for the rest of our lives, our kids' lives, their kids' lives. And this is going to be crazy stuff, but especially in sports and UFC. I mean, going back to that, just that, you know, UFC 249 alone, just the will they, won't they, all the different machinations about that. It's fascinating stuff. So yeah, this was these are a lot of fun. Looking forward to getting into the final 6 months of the year. We'll do that here over the next few weeks. And hopefully this fight card tonight, again, depending on when you're listening, this should be good. I am looking forward to going back over the next month and catching up on a lot of the fights that I missed over this year, a lot of the cards I missed. It's hard with a 4-year-old here and trying to, she has not been opened up to, I don't know if I actually talked about this. So a 4-year-old, she's never watched UFC. Obviously I've never had it on with her in the room, 'cause that's, you know, the punching other people is something going down that path with her just yet. Obviously we'll have that conversation at some point. Still never seen a professional wrestling match or anything like that. So and when she was home so much during the summer, as schools were shut down and everything, trying to find time to watch stuff while also making sure that my wife had time to do her work and mine, it was, you know, tough to kind of manage all that. So there was a lot of stuff that I missed, and a lot of stuff I need to go back on. So this month ahead, I'm looking forward to it, and hopefully looking forward to some, you know, top 10 fight rank lists and so on and so forth to kind of help catch me up a little bit more. And this series has as well, because again, with the UFC event every single Saturday, you're bound to miss some stuff. So I'm looking forward to spending some time and feeling a bit refreshed as we get back into 2021. So big thanks to Paul Fontaine. Thanks to all you guys for listening. You have a lot of choice in your podcast day. Swear I'm not, you know, choking up here. I appreciate the time you spend with me or any of the great people at WrestlingObserver.com. For subscribers, we are working on a survey. We have not done one of those in a few years, so be on lookout for that. Probably sometime in January as we work on that. And yeah, wish me luck as I play Brian Alvarez this weekend in fantasy football. I can't believe that's a phrase I even had to utter. We basically had a tie essentially last week. I edged him out by a point. This fantasy football league that we do with other Wrestling Observer people, the playoffs are 2 weeks and you do a combined score. He had a big night on Thursday out of Darren Waller and Josh Jacobs. So I'm coming from behind, need a little hope spot. But yeah, I can't lose to Brian. I just can't, or whoever this mystery person is behind the scenes that's helping with his team. So yeah, wish me luck this weekend. Let's beat Brian. Let's move on. And I either, if I win or whoever wins, we play Mike Sempervivi or Antonio Thomas, Promise Thomas, in the final. So looking forward to that. So hopefully by the time next time we talk, I'll be in a very good mood. I'll be in a good mood anyway, but a lot of stuff to look forward to. Anyway, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate. Have a great week. Be rested, and we'll talk to you again on the other side. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.